You're listening to Chuck Chat Technorama for Sunday, July 17th, 2005.
This show is a proud member of
the TechPodcast.com network.
Find out more about this and other shows at
www.techpodcast.com.
TechPodcast.com.
If it's tech, it's here.
Quiet, numbskulls, I'm broadcasting.
Unilateral phase detractors. Cardinal gram meters. 6 hydrocopic Margot vanes. Conductors and fluxes. Prefamulated annulite. Malleable logarithmic casing. Swerving bearings. Panometric fan. Milper trunnions. And the facient lunar wing shaft. Lotus O deltoid type. Semi-boloid slots of the stator. Drawn reciprocation dingle arm. Sinusoidal deplaneration. Retrocabulator.
Hello, friend, and welcome once again to Chuck Chat Technorama. I'm your host, Chuck Tomasi. With me, as always, I have the one and only Craig Stapp.
Hello.
And his volume is much better this time.
Yeah.
We had a little technical issue last time. Sounded like Craig was really far away, even though he's only in North Carolina, and I'm here in Wisconsin. Hey, you know, when you're talking the internet, that's nothing, right?
That's right.
This
all
is
one big happy family.
Don't interrupt me when I'm doing the tagline. This is Chuck Chad Technorama. We are low-leveling the internet this time. That went over like a Led Zeppelin. What a name for a band! Coming up in tonight's show, we have my review of the iRiver IFP 795. This may not be news to much of you, or any of you, or you, the wonderful, faithful listener, but I got my iRiver, and I wanted to tell a little story about it. Tell me a story.
This will cute be my story about his iRiver.
About a cute little iRiver. And Craig has news about
Battlestar Galactica premiere and a little titty about VMware 5.
A little what?
Ditty, I meant to say.
I thought that's what you said. We are headed to the Podcast and Portable Media Expo this November, right? Yes. That's a big we, right?
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. I'm ready to go.
I'm ready to go. Flights booked, hotels booked, no car rental needed since it's right at the airport in Ontario, California. And if anybody else is interested, well, we've got this for you.
Attention podcasters and portable audio and video enthusiasts. The Podcast and Portable Media Expo is November 11th and 12th, 2005, in Southern California at the Ontario Convention Center. Walk the exhibit hall and demo the latest hardware and software tools for creating podcasts. Hear from audio engineers about how they record and edit their own audio files, and attend classes on how to promote your podcast and attract paying sponsors. Register today at www.podcastexpo.com.
Looking forward to it.
Yes, I am. I can't wait. It's going to be cool.
And we have several links for tonight's show. Do we
yes,
not?
Yes, we do. Oh, yeah. You always got links for tonight's show. Or any night show.
Links! Links!
Hey, I want to talk about this first one I thought was awesome. It's the it's some retro arcade pictures from on Flickr. And I've got a link to them in the show notes. And this guy says, most of these pictures were taken from projected slides, rescued from a dumpster. And if you look at them, you'll believe it. Not that it's got lettuce or, you know, stuff hanging off of it.
Ew.
But no, the pictures are awesome. They look like some arcade that opened up. And these are like promo pictures or something from it because there's nobody standing around. Well, in most of the pictures, but the games are old as dirt. And it's so cool to see. Looks like Pong or something in one of them. Let's see. I mean, there's just games I remember seeing, but, you know, haven't seen them in such a long time, and it's so cool to see it. That's an awesome place, too. We've had several arcades around where I live, but none of them looked as cool as that.
Well, take a look. What's this other one you've got? PHP iCalendar.
Yeah. Have you messed with Sunbird at all? The other project that from Mozilla, the Mozilla guys?
No.
Sunbird is a project much in the vein of Firefox and Thunderbird, where it's a standalone application, but it does calendaring, kind of like iCal, you know, on a Mac.
Okay.
And you can use the calendar files. I think I'm trying to think what the term for the actual calendar files, but you can post them on your website, and they're basically XML files, kind of like RSS or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
But it contains your calendars and your to-do lists and whatnot, and PHP iCal will read that file and display it. And in Sunbird or something like that, you can subscribe to these calendar files and publish your changes back to it, and automatically you'll get this web interface that kind of gives you an overview of what they look like.
Well, that sounds handy.
Yeah, it's very cool. So I'm gonna check into that. I was thinking about downloading it and playing with it. So Sunbird's coming along. It's still in an early stages, like a 0.2 release. So it's not quite there yet, but it's still very usable. But and once you boot it up, you'll notice it's just like iCal.
Now, does this say Death Star Base or Death Star Bass?
Base. Whoever thought of a Death Star Bass? Come on, man.
Had to ask. It's one of those ambiguous words like recreate and recreate.
Yeah. This is a seller selling this on eBay. It's the Death Star Bass speaker, and it looks like anything any old Star Wars single geek would love. And I looked at it and I was like, man, that'd be awesome. But there's no way my wife's gonna let it in the house.
What is it, like a subwoofer shaped like the Death Star?
Yeah, you can read all about it. It talks about it. He took fiberglass and wood and everything and built this thing. It looks like the Death Star, but instead of the big laser, it's got a big woofer.
Oh boy!
In its place, and it's on a stand. It looks really nice.
I can only imagine how big this thing is.
Yeah, he's even got some quotes, I guess, from over time from people that have heard it, and one was from Colin. It says, Jesus Christ, what's that?
How what would you estimate the diameter of this thing is?
It's 36 inches.
Now, the average door is what, 32, 34?
Yeah.
You can't get this in the house. What are you supposed to do with it?
Shove it. Wait a minute. Let me finish reading these quotes real quick. Steve, I can feel my trousers vibrating. My neighbors. Turn your bass down. My girlfriend, that won't fit in our apartment. So I think that's his motivation. He's moving in with his girlfriend or something, and the Death Star has got to go. So
now I
think it's got like 2 days left, so you have plenty of time to go bid on it. It's actually in the UK. He says he can't ship it because of the weight. So you have to be near near Reading or Reading, however they say it over there in the UK to pick it up.
Yeah, the things you can find on eBay. We have to come up with a segment thing for that.
Yeah, we could do a whole show on that.
Oh, that'd be fun, wouldn't it?
Yeah, go dumpster diving on eBay.
Now, I think I mentioned a couple weeks ago that I've been getting at least once a day one of these phishing attacks for PayPal. Like, please validate your account, or your account security may be in jeopardy. This is a new one. This one actually got my attention for about 5 seconds. You have added Brian12313 at yahoo.com as a new email address for your PayPal account. If you did not authorize this change, or if you need assistance with your account, please contact PayPal customer service at, and then they give you the URL, of course, which looks like a PayPal.com account, but when you click on it, you're taken to some strange IP address, and then that says, just a minute, we'll reload the page for you. So it's all a bunch of hooey, but don't be fooled. If you haven't done anything other than buy and sell and transfer accounts, and you know what's weird is these things always seem to come right after I do a transaction. I gave somebody $10 for a birthday present to go buy something for me, and this thing showed up within an hour, and I went, this is really suspicious.
Well, you know that... I wonder about that, because how would they be sending you something if it was just coincidence, maybe, but I wonder if they're monitoring anything like that.
go to your real PayPal account and verify it. Do not click on email links. Just go to www.paypal.com manually. Check out your account and see if this phony address has been added or anything else.
Yeah.
But,
and we won't put that link in the show notes, by the way.
No, but I did mention Brian1232, whatever the heck his address was, at yahoo.com, just in case anybody wants to spam him. We have, again, another load of listener email, and we're going to have to rip through this pretty quick because we have listener comments and an email that we'll try to stumble through. Let's start out with Bruce Barr.
Ha! Just when you thought it was safe to go back in the water, he's back! It's Bruce! And I really am from Collin Creek, Kansas City this time. And I just want to take umbrage with the latest Technorama. We people from Missouri prefer to not call it, rather than calling it goofing off, we prefer to calling it going out and allowing you to show us that it is true, you know, because we're the show-me state. So...
Hold on, I got a comment on this. For somebody who didn't catch the last show, we had stated in an article that, actually I heard on one or two other shows, that the average employee wastes about 2 hours a day on the internet, and the highest ranking state was Missouri. So this is Bruce's justification back at us. And then he's got another one from, was it the last show or the one before where we talked about OS2 being decommissioned?
Oh, last time we talked about that.
Okay, so these are two comments really rolled into one message. So just wanted to clarify that for somebody who's going, what is he talking about?
Ooh, it's not goofing off. It is out there. Being Missourians, that's what we think about it. And OS2, and really what the announcement is the last vestige of anybody getting anybody at IBM to say anything to them about OS2. Is what has finally dropped off the wayside. OS2 as a operating system was really quite good, especially for its time, and was really popular. I don't know if you guys remember that, but there were a lot of people who used OS2 Warp, OS2 version 3, as a, you know, well, take this, you know, Microsoft, we're not going to use your operating system, we're going to use this OS2 operating system. Some of the people I work with, we used to do OS2 back in the 90s, exclusively for our enterprise-wide installations. Would you base your enterprise on Windows 3.1? Would you even base it on Windows 95? So we use it for enterprise operations and installations of thousands and thousands of seats. And some of the guys that I work with that were on the install side would argue with you for hours about, very, very logically, not just yelling at you, but giving you good logical reasons about how superior OS2 was as an operating system for servers, as opposed to their conversion over to Windows versions of the servers, and what immense headaches they had given to them on a silver platter from Redmond, Washington. Anyway, that's all for now, because, hey, I got to get back to work, you know. Bye.
Bruce, were you sending us comments from work? Got to use up your obligatory 2.09 hours.
Chuck, I wasn't going to say anything.
Point taken on the Windows 3.1 and Windows 95 network. We got another message from Scott Reynolds, who was commenting, didn't really say whether he liked it or not, commenting on our new Chuck Chat logo.
Hi, Chuck. This is Scott Reynolds. Leaving a little bit of feedback on this logo-looking thing. You know, it's obviously not, but at first glance, it certainly looked like some deranged rooster was taking a bite out of Chuck Chat, biting off the C and the H in Chuck. That's all. Thought I'd share. Bye.
Hey, you know what? It's funny you bring that up.
Yes?
There was a story about the chicken that actually attacked... No, I'm just kidding.
Help take a bite out of Chuck Chat. Maybe we should change it to Chicken Chat. And finally, we have our Alabama Uber geek, Charles...
I'm sorry.
Yes?
I'm sorry, Chick Chat.
Well, that's what Google keeps asking. I say, search for Chuck Chat. It says, did you mean Chick Chat?
No. All right.
We
I'm
have
sorry.
Our Alabama Uber geek, Charles Stell, providing us with some, well, feedback.
Hello, Chuck. Every show, you're always saying, give me feedback, give me feedback. there you go. Enjoy.
You know what the strange part about Scott's message was? What's that? That's the first thing I thought of was the chicken. You know what the strange thing about Charles' message was? When I ask for feedback, that's what goes through my mind, too. This is really scary.
Oh, no.
I'm somehow broadcasting, whatever you want to call it.
Telepathically?
Yes, that, too.
Spit it out, Chuck.
I'm so articulate tonight. We also received an email from Charles. Says, hi, Chuck and Craig, help! Well, we're here for help, I guess. Or we are the help. Our small business is coming to another of those problem areas. This is legitimate help. He's asking us for help, or any of the listener out there. I've been backing up on a CDR for several years. Yesterday, it took six CDs. Told you we'd stumble through this. The USB external drives look promising, and I keep hearing that magnetic media is longer lived than CDs. The boss is still wanting videos online by the first of the year, so CDs don't seem reasonable for the future. We have a LAN, but I would like to keep the backup in another building. You never know what might happen. Sorry, this pop filter is interfering with my vision again. Let me try that again. You never know what might happen, and if it is sitting in the safe in another building, except for when actually backing up data, it will hopefully be protected. I've even considered getting two drives and alternating backups. No, I'm not extremely paranoid. Once, years ago, I was backing up to tape when lightning struck the building, and I lost the whole thing.
Wow.
That's bad luck. There was a month-old backup, but I had to get another computer and install a tape drive in order to use it. Western Digital seems to make a reasonably priced unit. Reviews say it's a bit slow. I don't think that's a problem. Maxtor and Lassie seem to have infant death syndrome. So, what do you guys think? Thanks for all the help and keep up the good work. Even the detours. Charles Stell. I'm going to let you fire first on this one, Craig.
We're doing backups?
Yeah, and he's not sure he wants to do them with a CDR anymore because they're just not the highest capacity. And it sounds like there's this impending thing for video by the end of the year.
Well, I tell you what, if it's a backup that the company's relying on, I would look into one of those double-sided, the new DVDs that are coming out?
Like the Blu-ray?
Yeah, Blu-ray.
That will give higher capacity. DVD is, what about, standard DVDs right now are 4.7 gig, and a CDR is only 650, 700 meg.
Yeah, I was like, I'd at least use a DVD-R.
So right there, you're talking about a 5, 6X capacity. No, my math is bad tonight. A whole lot more.
But, I don't know. Turn my volume down, by the way, Chuck.
Sorry, he can't talk when he hears himself.
I can't concentrate. Anyway, I don't know. I would look into the Blu-ray. I mean, you can come off the hip with a few extra bucks if it's your company's relying on it. I don't know. But are tapes really better, longer lived than CDs?
No, I think when he meant magnetic media, he meant like hard drives. Take a 60 gig hard drive or 120 gig hard drive, bolt it on, do the backup, and throw it in the other building until the next backup cycle.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, you know, I don't know how much data he's talking about, but I'll tell you that I like backing up the CDs, you know, or something like that. But I would consider something a little higher capacity, like a DVD. You can get an external DVD, you know, drive for cheap as long as you're using USB 2. You know, I wouldn't try and dump a bunch of data to it using USB 1 or...
No.
I say USB 2, but you maybe FireWire, if you got it. So.
Right. USB 2 or FireWire are essential for the throughput that you're going to need on any backup. But, yeah, I'd say if capacity is an issue, CDR is probably beyond you. If you're just taking six CDs, I mean, I was kind of in the same situation when I was doing tape backups. When it got to be about 10 tapes, it's like, all right, what can we do to get off cartridge tapes? And that's when we looked at 8mm. When 8mm started getting too much, we looked at DLT. And now we're up to super DLT and ATL and a lot of these other higher capacity tape mechanisms at work. But that's... I don't know that we have been talking about hard drive backups, you know, buying a big hard drive bank in a data center somewhere off-site and just backing it up over the wire like that. Hey,
get this. I don't know all the specifics about it, but at work they were talking about they have this big SAN unit, and they have software that the machines actually see the SAN as a tape device and do a backup straight to it using a fiber channel, you know, on the back end. And it's like, bam, you got a backup image quick. Like, it's done, and then that unit gets backed up to tape during the next day because it's starting to take such a long time to do backups, which I thought was like, oh, that sounds interesting. So I don't know all the details to be able to talk about it intelligently, but it sounds like you're, you know, taking, like, your hard drive, making a, like a, you know, like an almost like an ISO image or a flat disk image on this high-capacity SAN device and, you know, do tape backups to it.
I would say at this point, knowing what I know about Charles Stell and the company he runs, it probably doesn't have the investment capability or budget for a SAN. No. But
I was just throwing that out there.
Yeah, I would say any backups are better than no backups at this point. And if it's a matter of burning six CDs, you know, you could probably get that down to one DVD, one standard DVD at this point, and still have some growth room for a while.
Like I said, look for look into one of those external, you know, those Blu-rays or the dual layer DVDs or something like that.
Or again, you know, there's the old 60 gig hard drive. If you're only using it once in a while, it's probably going to last a lot longer than one that sits on the network and goes chugga 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 all the time.
Yeah.
So hope that was some help, Charles. If not, hey, send us some more feedback. Go.
This is Dr. Pamela Gay from Slacker Astronomy, and you're listening to Chuck Tomasi on Chuck Chat.
And I talked to Pamela last weekend for an interview on the other show.
You're just gloating.
I'm looking for all kinds of interesting people to talk to. I do have a couple lined up for this show, which will be real interesting. Probably stick them out as a separate show on the same feed.
Hey, but, what am I, chopped liver?
I don't interview you. Would you like me to interview you?
So, Craig, what do you do for fun?
I watch TV and hack code.
Interview over.
Okay. Come on, thank you.
Thanks for letting me come in your house, Craig.
Hi there.
All right, we're saving that idea for another time, too. Yeah. We're giving people glimpses of what they might see in upcoming weeks.
Yeah.
All right, my main story this time. I'm going to make this quick. It's a review of the iRiver IFP 795. It's a solid-state MP3 player, but it's also got FM radio built in and record capabilities. That was the primary reason I bought this. Many of you may know me as an iPod lover, and I still love my iPod, and I love my wife's iPod that I just commandeered from her even better.
Hey, wait a minute. I just heard you refer to it as your wife's iPod.
It's still my wife's iPod.
Okay.
It's like I have my wife's car, my wife's van, half the stuff in more than...
Your wife's husband.
That's exactly it. But I needed portable recording capabilities, and the iPod, and of course I wind up with the first gen and the third gen, the first gen and the fourth gen, which aren't supported by iPod Linux, so I had no remote portable recording capabilities. So I picked up the iRiver IFP 795 on eBay, bought a buy it now for $99, and the company I bought it from was a little late because Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, I still hadn't seen it Wednesday night, as I mentioned, and they said they were supposed to have shipped it. They said, we received damaged goods, you should have it by Friday. I checked the shipping status on Thursday, still hadn't shipped, so I called them back and said, what's up? They said, we didn't get them Wednesday. I said, good, now you can overnight it to me. I mean, I was starting to get a little nasty, but in order to get it by Friday, we had a family trip to the amusement park. I wanted to record some stuff on Saturday for a soundseeing tour.
Soundseeing what? Is that what they said to you?
No, I didn't tell them that. I said, I have a very important engagement on Saturday that I need this for. So they sent me the tracking number and said, yes, my manager agreed to send this to. So very good customer service in the end. I did get them to ship it overnight. They said scheduled delivery. I tracked it on UPS all day on Friday. Well, not all day, you know, once an hour or so. I'd look and go, where is it? Where is it? It made it to Oshkosh, Wisconsin by Friday morning at 7:30. I said, great, I'm going to have it on the morning shipment. And I waited, and I went down around the time the morning shipment arrived, which was also, you know, when break time is. Nothing there. So, well, maybe it forgot to get off the truck. Which happens sometimes. You know, you get 150 packages in a company, and one of them gets left on the truck. They come back in the afternoon, they deliver it. Waited, didn't see it. All of a sudden, the UPS status page says, Oshkosh delivered at 12:56 p.m. So, how can it be delivered in Oshkosh? I don't work in Oshkosh. I work in Neenah. I live in Appleton, about 10 minutes apart. Anyway, long story short, it was delivered to my home. If I had read the screen a little closer, you all know I'm pretty myopic when it comes to status screens. It said, delivered to Appleton. It was delivered to my house, so it was sitting on the front porch in 90-degree weather on Friday. Needless to say, it kept me from playing with it at work. So I got home, I tested it out. I'm sure my boss is happy to hear that when he gets back.
Bob's happy.
Yeah, Bob's happy. He knows what happens when you get gadgets at work. You play with them.
Yep.
I got it home, I practiced with it a little bit. The menu interface is a little clunky. It's no iPod, but it's not supposed to be. The physical device is real nice. It's very discreet. You can put it in your hand and hardly anyone see it. And I've got pretty small hands. But the menu interface is just a little clunky. The features for recording are pretty nice. You can plug in a line in, which will give you, like, if you want to record from CD, you can record from FM, the FM transmitter right off of it. You can record from the built-in microphone. Or you can plug in an external microphone. So the line-in jack will change those resistance and power settings, whatever you need. So I took my old headset microphone and played around with it, got a little comfortable with it, and said, cool. Took my headset to the amusement park, recorded one recording at the gate when we were about to pay our parking fee. That came out just fine. Then I recorded about 6 or 7 more. All right, we're walking through the park. Girls have to stop at the bathroom. We're looking around for rides. None of those came out. I did a real quick scan, and it's got a little like equalizer VU meter thing when right. You're playing back.
Flat.
I went, oh, man. So I said, scrap the headset and just went with the built-in mic. Didn't record at the same high quality, but it did record. So I got about 13 more segments like that I've got to stitch together into a SoundSync tour. Everything from roller coasters to ambient sound walking around, hearing people screaming as they go around the rides. And it was a lot of fun. I got to tell you, my favorite was riding the American Eagle, which is an old wooden roller coaster from 1981, riding backwards.
Yeah.
The ride is so unpopular now that they resorted to running one of the trains backwards and one of the trains forward.
Really?
That's a weird sensation. So I hope to have that all put together. In general, for $99, it's a great portable recording device. I don't really care for using third-party applications to... it doesn't even really synchronize. It just kind of... You drag and drop files onto it. And I went, well, that's not too bad. But to do what I bought it for, wonderful. I like it.
Cool.
And I'm going to stick in another sweeper real quick here because I need a break.
Yeah, sure.
Do you want to get those relatives that are always asking you for help with their PCs off your back so that you can get back to Technorama Podcast? Then send them to me at www.typicalpcuser.com, home of the Typical PC User Podcast. Typical PC User Podcast. Help for the rest of us.
I think I recognize some of that music. That was Victor Cahiao from the Typical PC User Podcast, obviously. And
you get the Technorama guys off your back?
No. Get your relatives and friends off your back so you can get back to listening to Technorama.
Oh, okay, well, that's good.
He said it right.
Okay.
Craig's got a favorite show, and it's just geeky enough. It just started Friday night. Tell us a little, second season of your show? Right.
It's the second season of Battlestar Galactica. I want to know if anybody else has been watching this, any more sci-fi geeks out there like me. I'm loving this show, and I have to say the first season, of course, I was hooked on it, you know, because it's more real and gritty. It's not quite like the old Battlestar, other than it's got a similar, you know, background story,
mm-hmm.
but it's more real and gritty. They deal with people's relationships and things that are going on more than they do space battles, which when they do show the space battles are pretty cool, but that's totally different. Anyway, I wanted to mention, and I've mentioned this on my blog before, that Ron Moore, one of the executive producers, is actually podcasting, and if you subscribe to a show, what happens is you get the podcast, you watch the show, you watch it again, and listen to your high, you know, turn down the volume, listen to your iPod.
Mm-hmm.
It's like having director commentary on a DVD.
That's pretty cool.
He's talking about the different scenes. Oh, we were thinking about this when we do that, and we, you know, it's really cool. And of course, that you'll hear a tone. You pause the podcast during the commercial, and then when it starts back up, you unpause it and continue right back where you left off.
I heard about that. Now, I'm dying on this one, Craig, because everybody's saying how good it is, and I don't have time to get involved with a TV series. I wish I did. Yeah, only an hour. Let's see. That's an hour that I could be working on the website, an hour I could be doing an interview, an hour I could be looking up articles to put on this show because I haven't looked any up for this one.
Well, this is some of the best sci-fi on TV, so you got to make your priorities.
Anyway. All right.
But I do also want to say the other executive producer, I want to say is David Eric. I have to look at his name. Anyway, he's doing a video blog on there this time, and it's doing behind the scenes of them making the shows, which is pretty cool. I haven't watched any of them yet, so I'm going to have to go check that out.
All right. How am I going to get season one? Never mind.
ChuckChat is the only show that you know you can go to fill your head in the kind of stuff like Cooper Geeks.
Wish I could sing like that.
I thought you did sing that. Anyway, moving right along, I wanted to talk about VMware 5. I don't know if anybody out there else has used it. I've used 4 in the past and previous versions. And I use on my notebook, I use Linux, Ubuntu Linux on my, like I said, on my notebook. And I have VMware 5 installed with Windows XP as a guest OS. Once you get it installed and you get the VMware tools installed on your OS, which are like video drivers and stuff, let me back up. For those of you that don't know, VMware stands for Virtual Machine Ware. It's a hardware emulator. You install software in it,
mm-hmm.
and it's like its own little PC, but it's software based. So, I've got Windows XP installed, and with all the drivers and stuff for the VMware hardware for the networking, and it's seamless. I can just drag my mouse into the window. I'm clicking away in Windows, drag it out. I'm in Linux, and it's in its own little sandbox world. Now, this is what's cool about VMware 5, is I installed a fresh XP, put the CD key in, or the key in and everything, and got it registered, and then I shut it down. In VMware, I right-clicked on it and told it I wanted to clone it. I cloned it, and it asked me if I wanted to make a full clone, which would have copied all the files and made a separate installation,
mm-hmm.
or if I wanted to make a linked clone, and it just started, basically it just adds another separate machine, and I start building onto it. I did that, so if I wanted to install yet another clone, I just right-click on the parent one, and then I can make several XP boxes and install software, blow it up, and, you know, reinstall or recopy it. Very, very handy. Now, you can also set up teams of PCs and basically have, like having your own server rack inside your notebook or PC. So you can have several machines that all boot up at the same time. They're on a private subnet within, all contained within your PC. So you can have like a server and 2 workstations, or, you know, whatever configuration that your machine can handle. Very handy, especially if you're doing training and you don't want to set up a whole server in the whole works, you know, physical ones. So
now, what kind of processor and memory are you going to have? If you've got 2 gig of RAM and you're trying to run 6 machines on, you know, a 3 gigahertz Pentium 4, is it going to really start to dog down the machine if you're simulating a rack of machines?
I imagine it would to a point. Now, I am just using running XP and, of course, Linux as my host OS. I've got 1 gig of memory with 1.7 gig CPU, and it's seamless. And, you know, the menus, they have the fade effect. Everything's clean, and it looks great. So now when you start getting up to having several machines installed, like servers and stuff, I imagine you want to keep that kind of low on your on a workstation class machine.
Mm-hmm.
But at work, we implement the VMware ESX server, where basically it's a server-based, and it uses Linux as a host server. There's no GUI or anything, but it has a web interface, and it has you install virtual machines on that. It's very more high-end. There's a lot more features you can do. But, you know, if you think about it, if you run an OS, what kind of processor utilization does it have? Normally, if it's just sitting idle, what, 5%, 10?
So right.
If you think of the 100% as a whole, you got some extra, you got room to play with. So, you know, you can have you can afford to have a couple machines on there.
I suppose.
At least. Yeah. Works really good. The Teams thing is cool. I'm going to have to investigate that some. So, anyway.
Well, thank you.
And you can download a demo. I think it's a 30-day demo. And it is about $100 or so. It's, you know, it's not exactly cheap, but it's very handy.
I'm going to have to look into that because I've got some projects that's going to play into very well, I think.
I tell you what else is really cool, and I'll throw this in real quick because I know we got to move along. I wanted to reinstall my Linux.
Mm-hmm.
I took my XP images, my VMware images, the disk images, copied them to an external hard drive, reinstalled my whole OS, reinstalled just the VMware application, copied the images back on my hard drive, and XP was there just like nothing happened.
Oh, that's sweet.
Yes, that was worth the price alone.
Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and you're listening to Chuck Chat.
It's Sunday night, which means we have a featured tech podcast, Site of the Night. This week, it is Kevin Devin's In the Trenches.
Oh, not Kevin.
I know. I did a standalone. I tried to do this show justice back in early May when I was doing the show on my own before I had significant help. But this time, Kevin helped me out in a pinch. It was an hour before showtime. I said, Kevin, I don't have a segment. There's no other tech podcast members online right now. Could you give me a hand? So he helped me out and... We just spent a few minutes talking about him and his show and what it's all about. So here we go. Thanks for joining us tonight, Kevin.
Sure, anytime.
Well, tell the listener a little bit about In the Trenches.
In the Trenches. In the Trenches is the podcast for systems administrators. The way I started was when I first started hearing about podcasts and such, I got really jazzed, but I noticed that there was all these, even on radio and everything like that, there's all these Kim Komando and Leo Laporte, and they did shows that were focused more on the end user, you know, the home user and how to do little things like that, how to find their mouse and icons and stuff like that. But there wasn't anything geared towards the systems administrator, you know, the things that I do for a living. And basically, that's what I wanted. You know, I figured if I wanted it, there's bound to be others who wanted something like that too. Granted, it's a very narrowly scoped, podcast. You know, we have it's a very niche podcast. But that was basically what I was looking for, just something that served my needs. You know, and I figured maybe there'd be others. And fortunately for me, that there has been.
Well, you hit the target. I think your show was one of the first that I found shortly after downloading iPod RX and reading the Engadget article. I started browsing the directories and say, what's under technology? What's out there for IT? And yours hit the mark exactly. I used to go to seminars and symposiums and things, not necessarily for the content. Yeah, it was nice to find out about what's new in HP Jet Direct, but I really wanted to talk with the fellow geeks, and that's what your show really brings to me.
Yeah, well, that's what I hope to do. I mean, that's really what that's my purpose is, to be able to talk amongst your peers, and that's why you'll find that, you know, when we do talk about, you know, the different segments we have, the admin to admin or developer to developer, we're talking directly to peers. We're not talking down to talking down to end users or anything like that, or I don't mean to talk. I don't mean talking down. That's a bad choice of words. but I mean, we're not lowering the level any. We're keeping it as technical and as geeky as we want or need to be for our audience. And again, our audience is our systems administrators. So.
And they're not just an audience, they're actually the participators. In the admin to admin segment, a lot of the content is coming from the listener. I know I've thrown one or two your way, and mm-hmm. I'm probably due for another one soon. But developer to developer, same thing. Great idea. I wish I had thought of it.
Yeah, I mean, actually, it was your cohort that actually kicked that one off, to be honest. He came to me asking to participate in one, and he said, "Hey, what do you think about this?" He goes, "I don't think I'll have enough content to do my own, but how about if I be a part of yours in this kind of a segment?" And I was like, "Absolutely." And that's how the ball got rolling on those.
We've also got the periodic tech chats on the weekends, right?
Yep. Those were have been very popular. Just peers sitting around talking about whatever happens to cross our minds at the time. Some of them are scheduled. You know, we'll try to keep it narrow to a specific topic, but sometimes we just have a free-for-all and see what we come up with.
Those are great. Well, tell the people where they can find out a little bit more and how to get a hold of you.
Get a hold of me at kevin.devin@gmail.com or at the website, kevindevin.com, or via my listener line. So I'm going to plug it anyway. 206-888-4488.
Thank you again, Kevin.
Thank you.
Geek Thoughts.
Between my cell phone and my PDA on my belt, does that make my butt look big?
Once again, we have run over our time limit, but... We didn't BS and chit-chat quite as much this time anymore. Well, no. We'll save that for next time. We still have material we haven't covered that's going to have to go into the next show.
I know. We just have to keep them waiting. So anyway. Well, let's move right along. All right, guys, we enjoyed it. And this is how you can contact us. Listener line is 206-222-CHAT. That's 206-222-2428, or for the binary impaired. That's 1100111001. I'm not going to read it all. I did convert it, though. You can email Chuck at chuckchat.com. Or you can Skype him at chuck.tomasi. That's T-O-M-S-E. Or Gizmo ID is chuckchat. You can email me at keyboardmonkey@gmail.com. And don't forget to check out our website at chuckchat.com. Also, our cafe press, and we got some links to the stuff on there. So we want to appreciate it. And Chuck, you got any parting words of wisdom?
I do. A Windows shortcut is to the Unix symlink as a VW microbus is to a Hummer. There's no comparison.
No.
Thank you for listening, everybody.
That's right. And don't forget the binary high five.
101.
Good night, y'all. Man, I gotta stop drinking.
Why?